Welcome to Podski Wee Wee. I'm Josh Smith.
And I'm Mike Graham, the third.
The third. Oh, yeah. Getting fancy this week, huh?
I know.
All right. So I was lucky enough this past week to run into one of our mutual Twitter associates, the man who goes by USFL Tecmo on Twitter, Joe Pritchard, was at Tim Hortons Field to watch the Ticats Bombers game. He was up on a vacation, as listeners may or may not know. He's a CFL fan from Madison, Wisconsin.
Big Bomber fan.
Big Bomber fan. Told me he started off being a Stallions fan, though. So, anyways, I got, you know, he said he was coming up for the game. He fired off some messages saying, hey, let's meet up. So we met inside Tim Hortons Field. I met his lovely and very, very, very understanding wife, who is not the hugest football fan, but, you know, she supports her husband, and they were both super nice people, and we had a nice, like, we probably sat there, stood there in the end zone for a good half hour, 45 minutes, just chatting football, talking about life and all that stuff. Our mutual friend Mark, FenderGuy69 on Twitter, he also came over and had a chat with us. It was nice to meet, you know, nice people, and not everyone on social media is all creepy and stuff, so it was
Oh, Mark's, I don't know. Mark's really creepy. I'm just joking.
Yeah, anyway, it was nice to meet them, but as I was talking to them, an interesting thing happened. General manager of the Winnipeg Blue Bombers, Wade Miller, just so happened to be, you know, hanging out in one of the lounge areas in the end zone at Tim Hortons Field, and Joe was wearing his throwback Tom Clements jersey, so Miller spotted him, and they started chit-chatting a little bit, like shook his hands. Miller looked at me and goes, I'm all decked out in Ticat gear, obviously. And he's like, I'll even shake a Ticat fan's hand. Mm-hmm. So I extend my hand and, you know, pat him on the shoulder and give a little chirp back as I say, well, yeah, I'll be happy to shake your hand now because this is the happiest you're going to be all day. And he goes, oh, is that right? And we shared a laugh. And as we'll get into later, it probably was the happiest he was all day because the Ticats put a licking on the Bombers. But I just wanted to give a shout out to Joe and his wife, and I hope their trip to Canada was a success. They seem to enjoy themselves, and hopefully someday down the line we'll run into them again, because it was a lot of fun. So thanks for coming up, guys. Yeah. So with that out of the way, let's get into the football news. Sound good?
Sounds good to me.
So we got some Ticat stuff to talk about, the big one obviously being that, as we thought on last week's show, the injuries to C.J. Gable and Andy Fantuz are pretty significant. They were both added to the six-game injury list, and a report came out by TSN's Matthew Schinetti last week that both could miss 2 to 3 months of the season. That's a pretty big blow to the team, don't you think?
Yeah, you know, I suspected that it was pretty serious. I wouldn't have been surprised if they were out for the season. So I guess that it's kind of good news that they might be coming back before the playoffs. But, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if both are out for the whole year.
Yeah, it's same here. Like, and, you know, as much as both those players are great, the Ticats really haven't missed a beat with them out. I think Gable's loss is a little bit more significant than Fantuz's just because of what he adds to the running game, whereas, and don't get me wrong, I think Fantuz is a great player and losing him sucks, but the Ticats have enough pass catchers, I think, to minimize his loss. But yeah, that was that's a tough pill to swallow, but like you said, we both sort of expected these guys would miss significant portions of the season.
Yeah, like you said, it sucks, but you know, the depth on this team, I think we'll be all right without them.
Yeah. And in the wake of the injuries, the Ticats went and brought Nick Grigsby back. We talked on last week's show about the possibility of him coming back, and we both kind of poo-pooed it, thinking there was really no reason. We were both really impressed with Anthony Woodson, and they still had Ray Hawley, who I know I'm not, you know, huge on, but hey, they seem to like what he brings to the table. So I myself was pretty shocked that Grigsby was brought back.
Yeah, I was pretty surprised too, but I guess he knows the offense, he's familiar with it, so, you know, we've seen these players been released before and then come back a couple days later, so I guess we shouldn't be too shocked, but he wasn't playing this week. I was kind of surprised that Hawley got the start instead of Woodson, but, you know, I guess they'll he'll be the starting running back going forward, Grigsby.
Yeah, I think it's at some point he'll probably take over for Holly. I think the reason he just wasn't in the games earlier in the season when he was on the roster was due to some sort of preseason injury. I know that, you know, all the talk out there is that the Ticats like what Holly brings to the table in all three phases of the game. They think he's probably even a better all-around back than Grigsby. I haven't seen it, so I'm looking forward to Nick Grigsby stepping on the field once again.
Yeah, I think that he'll be in the lineup next week. You know, he probably could have been this week, but I guess they held him back.
Yeah, maybe getting him up to speed, back on the offense, maybe getting him back into game shape, because he hasn't played since that that first preseason game Hamilton had with Ottawa. So it's, you know, been over 2 months since he's seen the field, so probably has to knock a little rust off.
Yeah, that's probably it.
Another piece of news is that the Ticats are going to retire Angelo Mosca's number. A long time coming, I would think, but the Ticats simply do not retire numbers. The only other number out of circulation is Bernie Filoni's number 10, which they retired a few years back. So Mosca becomes the second Ticat player to have his number retired, and I can't think of a more deserving guy than Mosca. He is like he's basically a human mascot for this team.
Yeah. You know, when you think Ticats, you think Mosca. You know, that famous picture of him, and I'm not sure who else, but in the 72 Grey Cup when they're raising the cup.
I think it's Garnie Henley.
Yeah, okay. And at Ivor Wynne Stadium, you know, he just is the Ticats, so it's very well deserved for him to get his number retired.
Yeah, they're gonna do the number retirement, I'm assuming either pregame or at halftime, later this month when the Montreal Alouettes head to Tim Hortons Field to take on the Ticats. As I said, just super deserving. There's no one who epitomizes Ticats football more than Angelo Mosca. Like, the guy's last game, his retirement game, was winning the Grey Cup in Hamilton and then, you know, walking off the field victorious. He participated in 9 Grey Cups, the most of any player in the history of the CFL. I believe he won 5. So, like, just you know, Mr. Ticat, as far as I'm concerned. And I never got to see him play. You never got to see him play. But we all know the legend that is Angelo Mosca.
Yeah, and, you know, he stuck around after he retired. So he's always at the games. And I believe he lives in Hamilton or around the area because he's always at the games. So, yeah, like, no one else. I don't see anyone else get their number retired but him. So
yeah,
I'm happy for him.
For sure. Last piece of news before we get into happy, joy time. Emmanuel Davis was named one of the Shaw top performers of the week. I've ranted before about how I don't like this player of the week format, but if there was ever a player deserving of that honor, it is definitely Emmanuel Davis. 5 tackles, 2 interceptions, and he returned both of them for touchdowns.
Yeah, he had a great game, to say the least. And I think he's 3 for 3 with you know, all his interceptions have been return for touchdowns, so that's quite the little streak he's got going there.
Yeah, unfortunately, they've all come against Winnipeg, so we don't, you know, Ticats don't see the Bombers anymore this season. So hopefully he can return a couple touchdowns against some other teams the rest of the way.
Yeah, that'd be nice. That'd be nice.
Are you ready to get into this game, man? Because,
yeah.
There's a lot to talk about.
Yeah, a lot to say about this one.
I am going to start off asking you a question right off the bat. And my question is simple. Are the Ticats the best team in the CFL right now? Not easy, but...
Yeah, I'd have to say yes. I mean, you know, both sides of the ball have just been playing great the last couple of games. So at this moment, I'd have to say that they're the best team. Even though, you know, obviously we're huge Ticat fans, but I honestly believe that right now.
I'm going to agree with you. I don't know if there is a team playing better in all three phases of the game than Hamilton right now. We, you know, it's rarely talked about. We bring it up because of how great, you know, we think the special teams unit is, but people rarely bring up special teams, but that one third of the team is just, there's no better special teams coordinator in the league than Jeff Reinbold, as far as I'm concerned. And it seems like every single week that unit is making a play. This week it was a blocked punt and I won't say an onside kick recovery, but, you know, Medlock had the short kickoff that just bounced back into, I believe it was Jonathan Langa's hands, you know, using the wind to their advantage. It was windy going that way at Tim Hortons Field on Sunday. So just everything that special teams unit seems like once a week, they're making some game-changing play that is just helping this team be victorious.
Now, do you think that they were trying to do that with the kickoff, or do you think just think it was a lucky bounce and it just happened?
I think it was a lucky bounce. Yeah. It looked like the return man for the Bombers just misplayed the ball. And, you know, Medlock got good spin on it, and it, you know, spun backwards, honestly. If you watch, go back and watch the opening kickoff of the game, it was also short, so I don't know why that the Bombers kick returner wasn't anticipating that, to be honest.
Yeah. It was funny on the telecast, you know, Rod Black was saying, oh, they were onside, they were onside, and I was like, it's a kickoff, you boob. Like,
yeah.
Be honest, like, you can get it after 10 yards, but...
It's actually kind of funny because in the stands you'll hear people be like, no yards, no yards on kickoff sometimes. And it's like, guys, it's everyone's onside on a kickoff. That's if they're not, then they're offside and it's a penalty. So, yeah, sometimes people don't really understand the rules sometimes. And, I guess no yards is kind of ingrained into our minds on kicks. So I can't totally fault them for it, but let's use a little common sense.
Yeah, come on.
You want to talk about the three-headed sack attack?
Yeah, that was great to see. You know, I was talking about how Hickman, you know, hasn't been... You know, he's been getting some pressure the last couple of games, but no sack so far this season. Well, you know, he broke out in this one, and so did Norwood and Laurent, too. So that was great to see the defensive line get some sacks.
Yeah, it was pressure all night, just relentless. And it's nice to see it come from the defensive line. Maybe with, you know, all the havoc they are creating in the last couple of weeks. And like you said, Hickman has, you know, been close but not there with the sacks. So to see him have three was pretty nice. Maybe they can, you know, if this defense can get pressure from those front four and not have to blitz linebackers and safeties all that much, it makes them that much more dangerous.
Yeah.
Because this defense is a thing to be feared right now, my man. Oh. Like, this is... If they're not the best, then Edmonton's the best. These guys are, you know, it's 1A and 1B as far as I'm concerned. It's... They both do things well. They both do things differently. But watching this Ticats defense, especially at home, oh, it's such a treat.
Yeah, they're really, really beating up on the Bombers. I mean, Cotton went down. Willie went down. But, like, not...
Darvin Adams went down.
Yeah. But it's not dirty. Like, they're not a dirty defense. They're just flying around out there making hits. I mean, the secondary's making hits. Linebackers are flying around. You know, it's really fun to watch this defense right now.
It looks like they're just right in sync with what Orlando Steinhauer, pardon me, Orlando Steinhauer wants to do. They're reacting. They're not thinking. They're just playing. And it's surprising to me watching the game when the opposing team picks up a first down, to be honest with you, because the defense has just been that good.
Yeah. Now, what do you think? Do you think that the secondary is better this year than it was last year?
I think it's a symbiotic relationship. I do think they're better. I think they're still a ball hawking unit. Interceptions. We talked about Emmanuel Davis, but I think a lot of it has to do with, and I believe Emmanuel Davis actually brought this up in the post game comments he was making, that the pressure that the front seven is getting on the quarterback allows them to be a little bit more they're allowed to gamble a little bit more because they realize that the quarterback's going to have to make a quick decision. If you watch the first interception he returned for a touchdown about, you know, what was it, 2.5 minutes into the game maybe? Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a tip pass. But if you watch it, you know, Davis made the break on the ball as soon as he saw where it was going. So he was probably picking that off no matter what. And that's all because he knows that the defense is going to get pressure and force these quick throws. So, yeah, I do think the secondary is maybe not better, but they're definitely more confident.
Yeah,
they're not as worried about getting beat as what I can see.
Yeah, I think they might be more in sync this year. You know, I'm really impressed with Courtney Stephen. You know, I think he's becoming, a great player in the secondary because he just, you know, just the tackles that he's making, you know, he's flying around there. He seems a lot more confident this year. I've been really, really impressed with him so far.
Yeah, one of the things you bring up tackling, and that's one of the things that I love watching guys. It's a small part of the game, but just, you know, perfect tackling technique, you know, tackles in the open field when guys are one-on-one. It doesn't look like the Cats are going for those, you know, those monster hits, those Tyron Brackenridge type hits.
Yeah.
They're going for, you know, they picked up 5 yards, let's knock them down and let's make them scrimmage a second. You know what I mean?
Yeah, but you don't have to, you know, light a player up every tackle. You, like, wrap up, just make the tackle. You don't have to nail someone every single tackle. So it's good to see them, you know, actually wrapping up and making the tackles instead of just going for the big hit.
Well, and what it does is that it slows the guys down, and then it allows, you know, two or three other guys to come and swarm. And there's a lot of gang tackling because
there is a lot of gang tackling going on.
It's just a beauty. It brings a tear to my eye every time I see it happen. So
yeah. So Willie went down again.
Yeah.
Cats, and just saw on Twitter that he will be out for 6 to 8 weeks. So that's not good for the Bombers. Yeah. Little breaking news on the Potsky BB podcast.
Wow. Yeah. Always up to date here.
Yes. That's not good for the Bombers, I'd say.
No, it's also just it's unfortunate. Like,
yeah.
Watching the hit, it wasn't a dirty hit. It was just landed awkwardly, and it looked bad when it happened. And I'm actually surprised that has the ability to come back, because that just – they showed it on the – I don't know if – obviously you saw it watching at home, but when they showed it on the replay at the stadium, everyone was just like, ooh, and grimaced. It was
– yeah.
It looked ugly.
Yeah, he's been bouncing back from injuries all season long, but yeah, it's – you know, that you could tell that was pretty serious when it happened, so – hopefully he recovers and comes back strong, because he's a good quarterback and I like watching him play.
Yeah, same here. I'm a fan, but without him, they're in a lot of trouble, because Brian Brohm has shown absolutely nothing, and you know everyone's calling for Robert Marv, so maybe when he gets the call, we'll finally see what he has to bring to the table.
Yeah. So you want to talk about our quarterback a little bit?
Sure. Why not?
You know, he looked just spectacular in the first half. I liked how they were getting turnovers, but then they were capitalizing on them, scoring touchdowns after the turnovers. You know, I thought they were really airing the ball out a lot in this game.
Oh, for sure. They were using the deep ball. Not always effectively, but like the one touchdown pass to Terrence Tolliver was a thing of beauty. Mm-hmm. I know he hit Grant on a couple of big plays, and like you said, they were capitalizing on the mistakes the Bombers made, and I believe the block punt, it was the very next play, like boom, in the end zone, Bakari Grant touchdown. So
yeah,
they had that killer instinct, and yeah, you're right. Caleros in the first half was pretty spot on, and that brings me to maybe my only negative from the entire game. What the hell happened in the second half? Yeah. I understand it was 31-0 mm-hmm. going into halftime, and maybe that does, you know, make the players ease up a little bit. But it would have been nice to see them sort of keep the rhythm going. They just looked out of sync for almost the entire final 30 minutes.
Yeah, the way that first half was going, you know, you asked me the question, are they going to put up 50 on the Bombers last week? And, you know, that's always tough to do, but I thought for sure. I mean, the 31 points and, like, everything was going right for the Ticats. I thought they would have kept it going, but you're right. They just completely slowed down. They didn't score any points until that pick six near the end of the game. So Claros, I think Claros was under a lot of pressure in the second half. The Bombers got, you know, some sacks on him, and there's a couple interceptions. One not his fault. You know, the one he threw right at Tasker, but
yeah, knocked right off his hands.
Yeah. So yeah, I was a little bit disappointed that they didn't, you know, keep the momentum going into the second half.
It's weird because I look at how it, you know, how they played in each half, and yeah, we should be concerned that they didn't play as well in the second half, but it seems like they play well when they have to play well. And I hate the idea that, you know, they were looking at it and going, this game's in the bag, because let's be honest, at 31-0 at halftime, it would have taken a minor miracle for Winnipeg to get back into that game. At no point, you know, when did they score the third touchdown? I think there was like 7:45 left in the first quarter. I was pretty much, you know, yeah, this one's over.
7:30 to be exact.
Yeah, I was saying to my, like, you know, people I was sitting with, and just to myself, like, it's over. Like, they just steamrolled them to start the game. It's hard to get too wound up about how they played in the second half because of how well they played in the first half, and we've seen them put together maybe not full games, but definitely play well enough. You know, no team puts together a perfect, you know, 60 minutes of football. There's always going to be lulls. I just hope that this is not something we see going forward.
Yeah.
Now, I'll take 31-0 at halftime in every game, and if that this is the way the season's going to go, then I'll be okay with it. But I would hate to have this, you know, have them be in a tight game and then this happen, and, you know, they drop one when they're not supposed to. You know what I mean?
Yeah. You know, the interviews after the game, Claros seemed kind of upset with himself and the offense that they didn't keep it going. So that's the type of attitude you like to see from your quarterback. You know, he's never satisfied. He always wants to get better, so...
Yeah, I've seen interviews with him after games where he's gone like 25 of 28, and he's been like, oh, I missed some throws out there. And, mm-hmm. you know, you want guys to be happy with the win. He does, you know, genuinely seem happy when they win. But for if he's always going to try to improve, then he's always going to improve. And the label of average quarterback that some like to bestow upon him will go away rather quickly.
Yeah, and I expect another big game from next week, but we'll talk about that in the game preview.
Yeah, so... Let's talk about penalties for a little bit.
Okay.
They're really, you know, the Ticats are pretty clean in this one.
Yep. The whole game, you know, I would bet that there was the lowest penalty total of the whole season because there was only 11.
Yeah, that's got to be, and considering it was coming off, you know, that Argo Rider game from week before, which had like 40-something penalties.
Yeah,
like,
we'll talk about that.
Yeah, just ugh. But there's one penalty in particular that I want to talk about. I'm going to guess you know which one I'm referring to. The block in the back on the Brandon Banks punt return touchdown. Now, I'm not arguing that it wasn't a block in the back. It A, absolutely was, and B, it was the block that sprung him to be able to go to the house. So, absolutely 100% needs to be thrown. I am starting to think, though, that maybe when that flag is thrown, they whistle the play dead. Because what's the point? Any yardage gained after the block, it comes back anyway.
Yeah.
All you're doing is tiring out all the players on the field. Like, Banks ran from one side to the other and then an additional 100. So he ran probably close to, you know, 160 some odd yards to score that touchdown, if not more. Maybe, like, he was zigzagging all over the place.
Mm-hmm.
Just blow the damn thing dead. And, you know, the flag, block in the back, it's over and done with. You bring the ball back. Like, there's no reason to continue on with the play because none of it matters. Even, and if you watch like, Banks slows up near like around the 30-yard line, and then as soon as he gets in the end zone, he sees the ref throw the touchdown signs up, and then he points to the ref and then points down the field. He knew it was coming back, so.
Yeah. I mean, it's just frustrating watching such a great return get called back, and you know it's – as soon as that flag goes in the air, like, I know it's coming back.
Yeah.
So,
just blow the – change the rule. Just on punts, you know, because there's other plays where, you know, guys get blocked and, like, oh, from the spot of the foul or after yards were gained sort of thing. But on this, just dead the play and save us all. You know, I saw the flag right away. I didn't even jump up and cheer. I stayed in my seat because everyone around me was going nuts, but they must have not seen the nylon on the field. I knew it was coming back. So it's an exciting play that, you know, didn't happen. So just,
yeah, if you blow it dead, it, you know, people can get injured after the play too on a pointless play, so I like that idea of just, you know, as soon as it happened, just blow the whistle, call it dead, and get on with it.
Exactly. Just move on. No reason to continue with the charade.
No.
So that's pretty much all I've got to say about that big win, 30-point win, which is just huge. Like we said, just a butt kicking from every direction. Would you like to tell the fine people anything else that you saw in that game that you feel is noteworthy?
Not really, but I would just like to say that I'm happy that the second week in a row it's a sellout at Tim Hortons Field. That's always good to see.
Yeah, it looks like they're pushing hard for this one to be a sellout too. So let's keep that streak going, Tiger Town. It's now the longest sellout streak in the CFL. So I'm hoping we keep adding to that. And obviously, you know, Tie Cats are now 9-0 at home. Let's hopefully push that to 10.
Now, was it louder this week than last week, you think, or was it about the same? My dad's
here's the thing. It wasn't necessarily about it being loud. It was the game was over at, you know, like I said, people still stayed into it, but I felt like, you know, the big lead right away sort of didn't kill the crowd vibe, but it's really hard to sort of get into it as much when the score is so lopsided.
Yeah, there's not as much reason to get really loud on defense when you're up 31-0, so that's understandable.
Yeah, but no, it was still a great atmosphere. The fans were in it till the end. But yeah, maybe not as much as the previous week's game against the Argos. And also, you know, Toronto brings up so much more hate than Winnipeg does. So, you know, if the Ticats were beating the Argos by 50, I think fans would still be frothing at the mouth, going like, "Well, why don't we score 60?" You know what I mean? So
yeah, a lot of Argos suck chance probably.
Yeah, absolutely. So before we move on to talking about the other games, we got to slap ourselves in the face for some wildly wrong bold predictions.
All right, I'm not ready for this.
Yeah, Anthony Woodson will rush for 100 plus yards and record 2 touchdowns. Not even close.
No, he touched the ball once for 7 yards. So
yeah, so chalk that up as a big X. And I had Luke Tasker going for 125 in the touchdown, and he had 3 catches for 30-something yards. So, no.
Yeah, I was kind of surprised that he didn't see the ball more, but I guess that's just the way it goes some games. You know, different people are going to get the ball on different games.
Yeah, I did see a couple of pass plays where he was open, and Claros looked elsewhere. On the Ryan Bomben touchdown, for instance, he was wide open coming across the middle. Obviously, the play was designed to Bomben, and Bomben got open, so he tossed it there. But watching it live, I was like, I thought he had overthrown Tasker. I didn't see Bomb, and I was like, oh, my God, how does he overthrow a wide-open guy in the end zone? And then, you know, the big man catches it for the fat guy touchdown.
I'm surprised we didn't. We should have talked about that a bit, but, you know, that wasn't that easy catch either by Bomb, and that was a nice catch.
No, it was a beautiful catch. There's receivers in the CFL that can't make catches that nice.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah. Fat guy touchdown, so that's always good to see.
Indeed, indeed. So, yeah, we were just way off on our bowl predictions once again, and we will probably continue to be as we go forward in this silly, silly world.
Yes, indeed.
Okay, so let's touch on the other games this week in the CFL. We had BC, probably shockingly, beating Edmonton. And my one takeaway from this game, and this is the question I will pose to you, is what did you think about that Chris Jones gamble on 3rd down by 3?
I didn't like it. I mean, it was a 48-yard field goal. That's not – it's a long field goal, but it's not, you know, 55 yards or 56 yards. It's makeable kick for Shaw. So I just didn't understand it at all. You know, Nichols threw the pass, got picked off, game over. So, you know, Chris Jones likes to do things a little bit different. You know, he likes to gamble a lot. So this is just one that did not pay off for him.
You know, the week before, or maybe even in weeks prior, Jeff Tedford had gone for a couple third down gambles, but and had been raked over the coals for them. I wasn't as vitriolic in my distaste for those calls, but this one was just, it seemed like he overthought himself. Like, not only 48-yard field goal, it's long. Grant Shaw's got a hell of a leg. They're also indoors. There was no wind to factor in. I really don't know what he was thinking, to be honest with you. I don't know if anyone's asked him what he's thought. I'm actually curious. I'm sure this is going to come up on one of our podcast brothers, the Eskimo Empire podcast. We'll have to talk about this, and they probably have a little more insight into what's been being said in Edmonton. But I just, you know, I'm all for, you know, coaches being gutsy, but I'm not for coaches being stupid. And quite frankly, that was a stupid, stupid call.
Yeah, you know, with the Tedford gambles, different circumstance. You know, they had a chance to tie the game. They have to try to kick that field goal and, you know, take the game to overtime. So I don't know what he was thinking. I guess it's a little bit of a Don Matthews in him. But, you know, next time he has the opportunity to tie the game with a minute left, I think he should take the long field goal instead of going for it on third and five or whatever it was.
Yeah. Yeah, I can't really add anything to that. You're completely right. The only other thing I'd like to touch on, and only because it kind of rubs salt in your wound, is salts. That's not even a word. Jesus Christ. Salt in your wound is Andrew Harris, man. This guy is just playing out of his head. Yeah. As far as I'm concerned, at this juncture in the season, we're about a little bit, you know, every team's played at least six games, so we're a third of the way through the schedule. And he, as far as I, in my opinion, hands down right now, running away with not only most outstanding Canadian, but most outstanding player. He is the best player right now in the league, period.
Yeah.
Just awesome.
Game after game, he's racking up the numbers. 57 yards receiving and 118 rushing, so, and that big touchdown at the end of the game. So, yeah, I was completely wrong, and I'll admit that, about him being overrated. He's just, he's playing the best he's ever played this year, so good on him.
Yeah. So let's move on to Ottawa. And
I was not wrong about Lule.
Not entirely. Not entirely. He has looked pedestrian. So, yeah, you know what? For every time I chide you about Andrew Harris, you bring up Travis Lule and how poorly he's played. I think it's only fair.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, they won the game. Just short little thing on this game, and then we'll move on. First drive, awesome. Then he disappeared. Then the start of the second half, another good drive. Disappeared, and then the last drive of the game, he turned it on again. So I don't know why he seems to turn it on and off so much, but if he could just play the way he does at the, you know, the first drive of the game throughout the whole game, then he'd be one of the best in the league. But he just doesn't. So that's all I have to say about that.
Fair enough. Can't disagree with you at all. Fair enough. So yeah, Ottawa beats Montreal, and the Red Blacks, 4-2, doubles, have already doubled their win total from a year ago. So my question to you is, are the Red Blacks for real?
I think they are. You know, they were, both sides of the ball, they were playing great. They had pressure on Cato all game long. The offense was really impressing me. Burrows was playing great. The receivers were, you know, they picked up all those receivers in the offseason. It seems to be really paying off. You know, the offensive line is playing well. Walker had a good game. So at this point, I'd have to say that they are for real. You know, things can change in a hurry, but I've been really impressed with Ottawa so far.
I've been impressed, but my one caveat with them is that, yes, they beat Calgary, but I have not been impressed by Calgary pretty much all season. They might be the most confusing, you know, great team in the league. They got beat by Edmonton twice, and they haven't played Hamilton. So against what I consider, you know, I think Hamilton and Edmonton right now are the league's elite teams. And we're not going to find out how good Ottawa is against the Ticats until the end of the season. But they've already lost both games to Edmonton, so I'm still in a wait-and-see pattern with them. I'm not ready to say that they're, you know, ready to compete with the big boys in the league. Now, the thing is, they could roll off a bunch of wins before they really have to see a great team. They get Saskatchewan coming up soon. I know they got to go to Calgary. You know, if they can go into Calgary this week and beat the Stampeders, then I will change my tune. And I'm a guy, I picked them to go to the East Final this year, so I had faith in them going in the offseason. There's just something about them, I can't even say what it is, honestly, that just makes me question them right now. And I just got to see a little bit more.
Yeah, that's understandable. Yeah, I'm really interested to see if they can, you know, if they can beat Calgary twice, then, you know, that'll be, I'll be really, really impressed with that, you know. Beating Calgary and Ottawa is one thing, but then going into Calgary and beating them is another thing. So should be a good test for them to see if they're actually for real. I just want to say, do you notice that Rick Campbell always looks confused?
Yeah, I actually have noticed that. It seems like he doesn't know where he is half the time, right?
I know. He just looks like he doesn't know what's going on all the time. So I'm sure he's a good coach, but he just looks confused all the time. I just thought that was kind of funny.
Now, the one other thing I want to talk about this from this game, and I hesitate to bring it up because I don't want to give this guy any more publicity, but the Michael Sam coverage during the game was just ridiculous.
Yeah,
I'm pretty sure he got zeros across the stat sheet, and they had like a dedicated camera to him, and they were talking about him all the time. And, you know, look, I want to see him succeed just because I think he's a good player. He was great at Missouri in the SEC, which is, you know, it's not an easy place to play. He was Defensive Player of the Year his senior year of college. So I know he can play the game. I think they just got to lay off on talking about him, on hyping him up, because all it's doing is bringing people against him. And, yeah, I understand the story. He's the first openly homosexual player to play in the league. But let's watch him play. Let's okay, that narrative is done. He's done it. We're over it. Let's have the play on the field be what dictates the coverage of Michael Sam.
Yeah, you know, give him attention if he does something on the field. You know, he shouldn't have, you know, cameras focused in on him if he doesn't, you know, accomplish anything on the field. So I think it's a little bit over the top, and hopefully it's not like that every game going forward, because if he doesn't do anything, then it's a little bit embarrassing for him.
It's embarrassing for the league. I don't watch SportsCenter all that often, but from what I understand is after the game, all the highlights from that game were just the six or seven plays that Michael Sam was on the field and did nothing.
Mm-hmm.
And then they set the score. Like, come on. Like,
yeah.
That was a great football game, and you're concentrating on one guy who – it's just, you know, it's too much. Enough.
Yeah. Yeah, we'll see if he gets – you know, that's his first start. He didn't play every snap. He was a rotation player. So I'm curious to see – you know, how he's used going forward, if he's a rotation guy or if he's going to be a starting defensive lineman. So I thought he looked a little bit, you know, maybe rusty or awkward, you know, with that yard off the ball and all that stuff. So I guess he has to get accustomed to the CFL game and see if he can improve. But, you know, they should lay off a bit going forward with the coverage.
For sure. So let's move on to the final game of the week, which was, for my money, maybe the best one that we saw all weekend. Toronto with the come from behind victory over Saskatchewan to knock the Riders down to 0-7. So the question that I came up with from this game, do you think the Argos are better without Chad Owens in the lineup?
That's a tough one. You know, we rag on Owens a lot, but he's not he's not the best player in the league or anything like that, but he's a good player. I think he can help out the team, but, you know, I'm not sure about that. I think that they're better off with him in the lineup. I know that all the rookie receivers and, you know, Spencer had a big game coming out of nowhere. You know, I think that he has a lot of potential, but I think that the veteran leadership with Owens is helpful for the Argos, even if he doesn't put up big numbers every game. So I don't know what your thoughts are on that, but I think they're a little bit better with him in the lineup.
I would probably tend to agree. I'm just wondering if maybe, you know, at the end of the season, you know, Owens is a big money player. He's being paid to be a number one receiver. And from the looks of it, Kevin Elliott and, Hazleton and Gurley have overtaken him as the top receivers in Toronto. Like, all three of those guys have been playing, you know, they swap playing great one game for the next. It's, you know, one guy steps up and then takes a step back, and then one of the other guys steps. They've just all been, you know, excellent so far this season. And, you know, you can't pay a guy number one receiver money if he's not a number one receiver. And Owens is a little long in the tooth, 33, 34 years old, something like that. I would not be shocked if he is not in the double blue colors come next season.
Yeah, he's going to be a tackle next year, Joshy?
Oh, God, I hope not.
Yeah, but
that would be the worst.
Yeah, I could see him in a different uniform, you know, to end his career. You're right. He's getting paid a lot, and they have a lot of talent in the receiving corps. So, you know, I could see that happening. I just want to say that, you know, we got to talk about the penalties. I mean, just, you know, it was a good game near the end of the game, but that first half was just unbearable with the penalties. You know, shame on the players for, you know, just they're professional football players. They shouldn't be having all those friggin' penalties. You know, it's just unacceptable from the players to do that to the game.
Yeah, I saw a tweet from someone. It might have been Glenn Suter. I can't remember who it was. And they looked at the total penalties for the game, which I think was 43 or 44. And they said at least 40 of them were absolutely 100% penalties. They were simply calls that had to be made. So, you know, people like to rag on the refs for throwing these flags, but, you know, it's a double-edged sword. If they don't throw them, then all of a sudden you get these same fans going, oh, you didn't throw that flag, you're against my team, or you're biased, or you hate, you know, whatever it is. Yeah, it was it's now we're a third of the way through the season. You know, we're about to head into week 8. If guys are committing these ridiculous amounts of penalties, it's on them. It's on them.
Yeah. If I'm Milanovic, I'm laying into the Argos, you know, even with the victory, I'm saying, you know, we can't be having all, you know, Saskatchewan had a ton, or probably more than Toronto, but I'm laying into them saying, you know, we can't win with all these penalties, so you guys got to get it together.
Yeah, it'll be back-to-back weeks where they've just been penalized, you know, up the wazoo. They took a ton against the Ticats as well, and, you know, if Saskatchewan was a better team or didn't commit so many penalties themselves, the Argos probably don't win that football game.
Oh, yeah, for sure. I mean, the Riders had a chance at the end of the game to win that thing, but just couldn't pull it off, so.
24 points the Riders had taken off the board due to penalties.
Yeah.
24 points.
Two touchdowns for Getzlaff early in the game.
A pick six by Jeff Tisdale and a field goal by Paul McCallum, all wiped off the board due to penalties. Like,
yeah.
They only, what did they score, 26? They nearly had as many points wiped off the board as they scored.
Yeah. And, you know, I think that a lot of it has to be laid on Chamberlain. I mean, he just has an undisciplined team.
That's, you know, the one I will sort of, I thought was iffy was the one on Tisdale, and you could see him make the call, like sort of get in the ref's face, not like, you know, be a jerk about it, but he was like, he pushed me. Mm-hmm. And that's what it sort of looked like, that the Argo receiver, when they showed a replay, sort of didn't shove, but put his hands on Tisdale, and Tisdale put his hands on him to sort of fight off the hand fighting that the receiver was doing. And to me, I understand that it is a flag, but, you know, if the receiver initiates contact, it should be on the receiver.
Yeah. You know, he did really grab his jersey, but
yeah, he did. Like,
it could have went both ways. I thought
that's what I was thinking. So before we, you know, say adios to this, I want to get your thoughts on Brett Smith. I was impressed with him in his second start. I was especially impressed with his ability to throw on the run for any quarterback. That's difficult, but I thought he looked pretty good. In a second start, and you know, would have got the win if they, you know, his team could not take penalties.
Yeah, I thought he looked good too. You know, big improvement over his first start last week. He was slippery in the pocket there. Like, he was getting away from the pressure, and like you said, throwing on the run well, making plays on his own, you know, improvising. So he would have had a bunch of TD passes if they weren't called back. So maybe. Saskatchewan has found something good out of all the quarterback injuries that have come their way.
Yeah, I think he's a keeper. You know, people like to say that I don't say very nice things about Saskatchewan, but I was impressed, as impressed with him in this game as I was with Rakeem Cato in his first start. I thought they both played really well, and for rookies to succeed that early in the CFL, it's very rare. So I'm curious to see how he looks going forward. The Riders are on a bye this week, so we won't see him this week. But in 2 weeks' time, I want to see more from this guy. I like him.
Yeah, I thought it was interesting to see that there looked like there's actually people in the crowd in Toronto this week. You know, not like a huge crowd, but you know, it looked better than it did all last year, pretty much. So,
and it certainly was loud. That crowd seemed to get into it. Now, I know a lot of Rider fans were there, so it was loud for most of the game, regardless of who had the ball. But yeah, I'm with you. That was a pretty decent crowd for an Argos game.
Yep.
All right. So enough of Week 7. Let's move on to Week 8, and let's preview the Ticats' upcoming game at Tim Hortons Field this Saturday against the BC Lions. The Lions have actually paid a visit to Tim Hortons Field before. They're one of the few teams that will be making a second trip here. The Ticats won last year, 19-17, and did not score a touchdown, offensively, defensively, or on special teams. So if the Lions can get that again, they might be the team to put the first L in the loss column. So what do you think the Ticats have to do this time around to get the W?
You just got to stop Harris. That's it. You know, I'm not worried about Lule passing the ball. Just stop Harris and they'll win the game handily.
That's pretty much all I have written down too. You're never going to stop the guy, but if you can limit his impact, which, you know, it isn't easy. You know, like I said earlier, he is, as far as I'm concerned, the best player in the league right now. So, they definitely have to minimize his impact. I want to see them offensively continue to spread the ball around. They have so many great pass catchers. Just don't key in on one guy. Let the game come to you. Let Zach Caleros find who's ever open. And, you know, BC secondary is not the greatest. So there is opportunities there for the Ticats to make some big plays.
Absolutely. I mean, you got, even with Fantu's out, you got so many options. Tolliver, Grant, Tasker. You know, so spread the ball around. Caleros, you know, keep the momentum going with Caleros. I think he'll have another good game. So I'm going to be, you know, it'll be interesting to see if Grigsby is back in lineup. They'll probably give him the ball quite a bit because I think they trust in him. So, yeah, I don't think that the BC Lions are going to come into Tim Hortons Field and beat the Ticats. I'm pretty confident that the Ticats are going to, you know, smack them around pretty good this week.
I don't want to sound overconfident, but I sort of feel the same way you do. BC's been up and down, and they seem to play decently well at home, but no team has come into Hamilton and won yet, and I don't see them being the first team to hang a loss on the Tabbies at Tim Hortons Field. I just think this team is just – they play differently in front of the home crowd. That defense just gives nothing, allows for nothing, and with an offense in BC that – you know, I think it's good. Like, I'm a big George Cortez fan as an offensive coordinator. I think he can design an offense better than almost anyone in the league. Mm-hmm. I don't know how I don't see any scenario where the Lions come in here and beat the Ticats. I can't see it happening. Hamilton would have to pretty much implode. And they have not really played a bad game at home since they've moved into Tim Hortons Field. I don't see it happening on Saturday.
Yeah, you know, the BC Lions wins have been, the defense has, like, kept him in the game, I thought, and then the offense makes a big play near the end of the game. So I think I don't think the Lions are going to hang around. You know, they have to put out some points on the offense if they're going to win this game because, you know, Hamilton's offense is just too good. They're gonna score points. They're not going to allow the Lions to just hang around and then steal one late. So I have a lot of confidence that the Ticats are going to pull off this win.
Yeah, if the Cats jump on them early and it's, you know, 14-0, 17-0, you know, 17-3, you know, late first quarter into the second quarter, I think we could probably put this one to bed pretty early if that happens.
There'll be a lot of Lule clapping his hands running off the field this week, I think.
Yeah, yeah. Indeed, indeed. So, bold prediction time. What do you got this week, buddy?
Right, I'm going to say that Lule is under 150 yards passing and has 3 interceptions.
Ooh. Okay, so you also have a lot of confidence in the defense. Mm. I am saying that the defense will hold Andrew Harris under 70 yards rushing. The most they've given up to a player so far this season was they gave up 70 to John Cornish in week 1, and I think they hold Harris under that number here in week 8.
Well, if both those predictions come through, I'd say it's pretty safe that we'll get the win.
If we nail these ones, hopefully these are the ones we get right, Ticats up their record to 5-2. So, with that said, let's move on to the fan favorite segment of the week because they get to be involved. The questions from Twitter. What do you got for me, Mike?
All right. Going from at Canes Eagles. As far as the young receivers go, who do you think has been a surprise so far this season? Now, I don't think I told you about this question, so I'll answer it first. You know, I thought that Underwood would have a big season. I don't know why I thought that. I just had a feeling. But I've been really impressed with Tolliver. You know, he's a starter in this offense, and he's been showing that the coaching staff made a good decision in putting him in there. So he's been making plays. You know, he's making a lot of catches, you know, getting touchdowns. So I've been impressed with him a lot so far. And I'm sure that you would probably have the same answer.
That would be the exact same answer I would give. If, you know, with a hat tip to Junior Collins, he's been pretty steady since being inserted into the lineup. Not big plays, but, you know, he had the big touchdown on his first catch, and he made some nice catches, and he was back there returning punts in the fourth quarter against the Bombers when they the Ticats seemed to put Brandon Banks on the sidelines after he took that hit to the knee near the end of the third or beginning of the fourth, whenever it was, in a punt return. But, yeah, it's got to be Tolliver. I think if it wasn't for Rakeem Cato, we'd probably be looking at our Rookie of the Year. Mm-hmm. If not in the whole league, at least in the East. But yeah, just, you know, having a fantastic first season, the likes of which I haven't seen since Chris Williams' rookie year in 2011. He's just been that good.
Yeah, I agree. Another one from Canes Eagles. It's kind of pertaining to Tolliver. Do you see Tolliver playing a big role this season? I really like what he's done so far. Yeah, I think, you know, he's played a pretty big role so far. I don't see that changing at all.
No, yeah, same here. He's, you know, he's their big play threat in the receiving corps. You know, he's got a pedigree to him. He went to LSU. You know, that's not a school where guys, you know, get on the football team just because. Like, I believe he had he was an MVP, or he had a big game in one of their bowl games a few years back. So the guy's a baller, and if he continues playing here, he probably won't be in Hamilton for very long. Mm-hmm. But let's just appreciate what he's doing. And, yeah, going forward, yeah, he'll be a huge part of the offense, especially with Fantuz out.
Yeah, I agree. Another one. At Stednik, the Riders are the worst team right now. Will they be the worst at season's end?
Well, they are, they're 0-7. Montreal is the next worst team at 2-4.
Mm-hmm.
And then I think it's Winnipeg at 3-4. Winnipeg is probably due for a bit of a slide now that you, with your breaking news, Willie being out 6 to 8 weeks. I still think, you know, they're 0-7. No, I'm saying the Riders end the season as the worst team in the league. And I'm even going to give you a number. I'm going to say they finish 4-14.
Yeah, I'd have to agree that, you know, I think that there's just everything's going downhill for the Riders so far this season, and I don't see them turning it around. So 0-7 is a huge hole to dig themselves out of, and you know, they might even be looking, you know, the management might be looking to next year already. So I think that yeah, I think that the Riders are going to be the worst team at the end of the season. Yeah. Even though, with Willie out, the Bombers, like you said, might be in trouble, I still see the Riders being the worst team.
Yeah.
At Fender Guy, if granted the 10th theme with a fully open equalization draft to start, who's your number one NI and number one import that you draft?
This was tough. Yeah. So my number one international player, I'm going quarterback. You win in this league with quarterbacks, and I went back and forth on two guys. They both play in Southern Ontario. I'm going to go with Zach Caleros. Mm-hmm. You know, young quarterback, you know, just keeps getting better and better and better. I nearly took Trevor Harris, but I got to take Zach Caleros. You know, you win in this league with quarterbacks, and if you surround him with enough talent, and he's got enough talent himself, you can really do some damage. As for national players, I'm sticking in Hamilton, and you know, I'm going Ted Laurent.
Oh, yeah, right.
I think he's the best Canadian player. You know, he's not Andrew Harris, but as it comes to Canadian players, you know, you're gonna have to pay him a lot of money, but you got that, you know, that stud Canadian big man in the middle of your defensive line, and there's none in the game right now, interior defensive lineman playing better than him. Give me Teddy Laurent.
You're an a-hole. You know that?
You took the same two?
Same two.
Oh.
So, yeah, I just, you know, Claros, like you said, just keeps getting better, and Ted Laurent, you know, is great, great in the middle, you know, stopping the run. Huge asset for any team. So, yeah, I had the exact same players.
I would have taken Harris, but I wanted to get a guy on both sides of the ball. So, you know, it's just... Well, hey, you know, sometimes we agree on things. It's just the way it goes, you know?
Yeah. All right.
We don't always have to disagree.
That's true. That's true. Another one from Matt Fender Guy. If you were a head coach, what's your sideline attire? Hat, visor, golf shirt, athletic tee, shorts, pants, suit and tie?
Well, I have not worn a suit and tie since I was about 9 years old, so... That's out. I'm a hat guy. Love wearing hats. Have, you know, 24 or so hats in my collection. I hate to call it a collection because it's not really that. It's just hats I wear. So I'm wearing a hat. I'm rocking the athletic tee just because I love t-shirts. And I goddamn hate pants, so I'm rocking shorts. So, yeah, there you go. Hat, athletic tee, and shorts. That's basically what I wear now anyway. If I could get away with wearing sandals on the sideline, I'd be doing that too. So, yeah, whatever's most comfortable. You know, it's hot out there some game days, and I want it to be nice and light and breezy. So there you go.
I'm rocking the suit and tie.
You're rocking the suit and tie.
I'm doing the throwback. I think
going old school.
Yeah, just you know, change it up, get a little class on the sidelines. You know what I'm saying?
Well, I've never been called classy before, and I don't think I'll be called classy anytime soon. So. Oh, okay. Yeah, you're going to look good over on the sidelines. I'm going to be nice and comfortable. And, hey, if it's anything like our fantasy teams, I'm going to win anyway, so it doesn't matter.
Yeah. You got any questions there?
I do. Also from our buddy Fender Guy, he asks, does a team like Hamilton trade a first-round pick for Getzlaff or Bag in case Fantuz is gone for an extended period?
No. No, they do not. Don't trade away the future because, you know, Fantuz is out. They seem to play pretty good without him. So, you know, I just don't think it's worth trading away a future, you know, number one pick for short-term gain because, I don't think we need to do that at all.
I don't think they need to either. And a first-round pick seems like a steep price tag. Especially for older guys. My one caveat is that Hamilton's pick is probably going to be later in the draft. This is a team that's, you know, if not getting back to the Grey Cup, getting to the East Final, so they're not picking in the top, you know, 1, 2, 3. So it's probably not a move I would make, but I'm a big Rob Bag fan and would love to see him in black and gold. I don't know if I'd deal a first-round pick. Second-round pick, maybe. Maybe, because he's also a guy that he is a little older, but he still has a lot left in the tank. So, I'm not sure I'd make the deal for a first, but at a reasonable price, I would take either guy, even if Fantuz is out. You know, never bad to have more options in the offense.
Yeah, and the CFL draft is, you know, so much different than any other professional draft. You know, some of the best players are taken late in the draft because you don't know if they're going to be NFL guys or not. So, yeah. Even if we do, you know, obviously I think we're going to have a late round pick in the first round, but you could still get a really good player, late in the first round or second round. So,
yeah, for sure. So, yeah, I guess we're both not making that deal. Although I would consider it, I think, a little more heavily than you would.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
I got another one here, from our buddy Joe, USFL Tecmo, who, I had the, you know, joy of meeting this past weekend. He asked a simple question, what is it like to have a special teams unit that isn't a complete dumpster fire? He's a Winnipeg fan, and their special teams unit is atrocious, so that's where that question comes from.
Well, it's nice to have, you know, we've talked about Ryan Bold and how impressed we've been with him. It's just nice to have that extra element to the team. You know, if you're good on offensive defense, you know, the special teams is just the icing on the cake that makes a good team great. So it's wonderful to have, you know, that extra element.
Yeah, I can't really add anything to that. You're completely right. We've gushed over Jeff Reinbold in the special teams unit for a few weeks now, probably since we even started the show, to be honest. So we know how we love our special teams guys here in Hamilton.
It's going to be all right, Joe. It's going to be all right.
Yeah. Well, maybe not with Willie out. Maybe
yeah,
Willie,
I suppose. Yeah. It's not going to be all right.
Yeah. Don't give him false hope.
Yeah, sorry.
Mike from the Hammer asks, I am wondering when each of the multitude of players on the IR are expected back in action. As we said earlier, or as I said earlier, there was a report out there that said Gable and Fantuz could miss 2 to 3 months. As far as the other guys are concerned, it seems that CFL teams keep injuries like a closely guarded secret. I remember a couple years ago, Greg Ellingson got hurt. And he was on the one game injured list for like 6 or 7 weeks, and it didn't come out until after the season that he had like broken his leg or he did something like that required, I don't know if he sprained his ankle, or I just remember it was like no one ever said this during the season what injury he had, and he was gone for like 7 or 8 weeks, and it just seems like, you know, you never really know because teams just don't allow that information to get out. It's silly as it may be, I really don't think it makes much of a difference, honestly. But if teams think it gives them an advantage to not tell anyone anything, they're just going to keep it to themselves.
Yeah, you know, I couldn't answer that question. I don't have any insider information or anything. So, you know, I wish the coaches kind of changed that, or the league insisted that the coaches release more information about injured players, you know, if they want to cater to, you know, the fantasy football element and stuff. It's helpful for the fans and stuff, and for the media. So, you know, I couldn't answer that question, but it would be nice to get more information about injured players.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Last one here from Matt 757-93318. Jesus, buddy, get a better Twitter handle. Like, that's, at first I thought it was his phone number in there, but I was like, it's one digit too short, but yeah, that's, come on, let's change it to something a little more pithy.
Shorten it up a bit.
Even so, unless he's the, you know, 7,500,000. You know what? I'm not going that far. Forget it. Anyway, he asks, what's worse, the number of flags or the lengthy conferences needed before refs actually make the call?
Well, you know, there's been lots of flags this year, but I think that it depends on the game you watch. You know, 40 some odd flags in the Toronto Saskatchewan game, only 11 in the Hamilton game. So, you know, I think that's, even with that huge flag game in Toronto this week, I think it's starting to come down. You know, the averages are going to be a little skewed because of that game this week. But in years past, the conferences have been kind of annoying with the refs, you know, just, you know, if you have to get together, then do it. But it seemed to be more frequent than I'd like. But I think they're trying to eliminate that as well. So, you know, hopefully they both get less and less as we go on here.
You nailed it. You've been pretty on the ball today. I'm suitably impressed. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. It's hard to really, you know, comment on anything after you get the first word in, because you're just nailing it every time. Couldn't agree more, sir. Could not agree more. So that's my last one. You got any more, or are you done too?
That's it.
All right, folks. So that's it for the show this week. As I say every week on this little outro we do here, don't forget that you can subscribe to the podcast on iTunes. You can also listen on 3downnation.com. If you want to have your questions answered, as the I'm assuming all the gentlemen, because I don't think there was a single lady that asked one this week, and I'm not sure if we've had a lady ask one any week. I think our audience probably skews pretty heavily towards men. But if you're out there, ladies, you know, throw a question our way, or, you know, let us know that, you know, the ladies like this show too, because I don't want Mike's sexy voice to go to waste.
Yeah,
we want the ladies.
I think there was one question from an Eskimos fan, a lady fan. So I think there was one.
All right, well, let's keep them coming, ladies. Yeah. We want some diversity on this show. Anyway, if you want to have your question answered, you can hit Mike up on Twitter. Give him your Twitter handle as always, buddy.
Mike_Ticats.
And you can hit me up too. I'm at @JoshSmith_82. We didn't get one this week, but if you want to post a question in the comment section of 3 Down Nation, by all means, go ahead and do so. Before we sign off, I have been getting a lot of requests to shorten the intro. I have finally gone about it and done that. So this week's show at the top, you will have heard the intro is about a minute long as opposed to the 4.5 minutes we had before. It took a while. You know, it's not the easiest thing in the world to edit crap together, but I think I've done a good job. So if you like the new intro, it's not all that different. I kept the same song that we use. Added a different highlights to the beginning, just two or three, I believe. So if you like it, and we'll continue going forward, that'll be the new intro. So hopefully people will get off my back about the lengthy intro. But it got my butt into action. And now we're finally ready to introduce the new one. So that's nice. So for Podski Wee Wee this week, I am Josh Smith.
And I'm Mike Graham. Eat 'em raw.
Eat 'em raw.